Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you. I want to start with a message to those of you listening to this in Alberta. Albertans, are you guys okay? Is everything okay after the riots? I mean, I'm reading now from a Huffington Post story. Albertans are rising up against Tim Hortons. Dear God, national news story. Albertans are rising up against Tim Hortons after the coffee and donut chain pulled ads for energy giant Enbridge from its locations. The national news attention on this protest, which I think physically manifested in at least six people, maybe even 24, protesting outside of a Tim Hortons location in Calgary, it got attention on the scale of the tens of thousands of students who protested in Montreal. How did this happen? I know this is very silly. It's a silly story that the news loves to run, people boycotting Tim Hortons. But how this became a national news story is worth a close look, because it's a story about manipulation. It's a story about manufacturing outrage. It's a story really about deceit, about fooling people into thinking that a lot of people are angry about something that they really are not. The person who took that close look is Paul McLeod, the politics editor for BuzzFeed Canada. Yes, there is a BuzzFeed Canada, and yes, it has a politics editor. Paul is a former political reporter for the Chronicle Herald in Halifax, and that's where I met up with him to talk about how this happened and how reporters get spun by people in politics all the time. Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Michael McDaniel, Sig Gerber, Thomas Woodhall, Ken Donnelly, Terrence, Isaac Waller, Alexander Naylor, Jonathan Fidler, Natalie Clancy, and George Berger. George, why did you decide to be awesome?
There's very few people that I have as great a confidence in who do have politics different from my own, that clearly value truth and honest reportage over everything else.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit Douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode is also brought to you by our first sponsor ever, the Canadian company FreshBooks, a super easy cloud accounting solution that is designed for small business owners, entrepreneurs, and freelancers like Chad Moore. Chad, tell me about your business.
I am a freelance graphic designer and web developer. I now use FreshBooks to invoice for my business.
And why did you decide to use FreshBooks?
It's awesome. Like, it's a really very handy tool, much better than the alternatives that I was aware of when I signed up, particularly because it's all web-based, and I really like that their head office is like less than a kilometer away from my house.
Guys, I just did my taxes. I am very glad that I have FreshBooks. It makes my life easier. You can try it for free for 30 days when you go to freshbooks.com/CanadaLand, and when you do sign up, tell them who sent you. You'll be supporting this show. freshbooks.com/CanadaLand. So, Paul, I'm looking at the headlines today. Global News: protesters call for Tim Hortons boycott. Tim Hortons boycott follows Enbridge ad flap, says Huffington Post. Tim Hortons pulls Enbridge ad, sparks Twitter furor. If I go outside today to a Tim Hortons, am I going to get...
It's chaos out there. They're throwing rocks through the windows. I mean, they're looting Timbits. It's just a complete madness. People are up in arms about this Enbridge thing. It's all anyone is talking about, for sure, because it was trending on Twitter, so this must be true. I haven't actually left our hotel yet, but I'm assuming that's the case out there, because Lord knows if it's trending on Twitter, this has to be something that Canadians care about.
And seen. There is often a gulf between, you know, when we're reporting on a popular movement and then the reality of the popular movement, There's often some light between those two things. I can't remember an occasion where there's been as much space between those two things. If you read the papers today, you would get the sense that this country is boycotting Tim's because they pulled Enbridge ads, because this country is on side with the oil and gas industry and they will not get their Tim Hortons coffee. I don't think that there is any sense in 99% of Tim Hortons locations in this country gives a damn about
this. No, yeah. I mean, how could people possibly care about something so silly? This started from an actual movement. I mean, well, movement. It was a petition, but, you know, there were, I guess, tens of thousands of people who signed a petition that they were angry that Tim Hortons was taking ads from the oil sands company Enbridge for this Tim's TV thing that they were doing that sounds terrible in their stores. Tim's, not wanting to annoy its customers, decided to take the ads down, which is something that companies do all the time. They, you know, pander to their customers. And then this backlash to the backlash comes out and seems to get far, far, far more of a grassroots upheaval than the initial petition.
More coverage and more attention the backlash of the backlash. But the original movement of the petition of "we don't like these Enbridge ads" and Tim Hortons, that actually did have, I think, about 30,000 signatures in the petition. What you've documented for BuzzFeed Canada is that the backlash to the backlash, the conservative response saying Tim Hortons is showing a lack of fidelity to the oil industry, you've really documented how a handful of people made that happen.
Yeah, and really one guy. It's astounding. It really came down to one guy, a guy named Stephen Taylor. He's a longtime conservative, a former candidate. He's done a lot of work for conservatives over the years. His field is strategic political communications, as they say. And this is the stuff he does. I mean, his job is to manufacture anger, manufacture interest, and manufacture controversies like this. And he's I got to say, he's doing it very well.
I don't know that he would necessarily protest any of these descriptions. I've been aware of him as he's sort of a fixture in the conservative blogosphere. He's been on Twitter. He's been a candidate. He's been paid. And he's sort of, you know, you might less generously describe him as a hatchet man or an operative. He's there to kind of make these kinds of things happen.
No, I don't think Stephen would object to that at all. I mean, so this is a guy who had...
He was bragging on Twitter about his BuzzFeed, your BuzzFeed coverage of him,
yeah,
by the way.
Yes, he was. Yeah,
I mean, it makes him sound very powerful, and that's what he's paid to do, is to kind of create, to gin up a news story, which he did.
Stephen, if you're listening, I want a royalty check from your next big contract. You owe me 20%, the finder's fee.
So this stuff doesn't happen how people think. There's no like conservative star chamber where they get together and they decide how to manipulate the press. He was almost organizing this out in the open.
Completely. It was all there. It was just, I mean, so this is a guy who has been very strong advocate for the energy industry. He's actually been paid by them through Fleshman Hillard, this PR firm. He worked essentially for the Keystone XL pipeline and a PR campaign to try to get American approval for that. So, you know, he's got a vested and financial interest in this, which is, you know, great. But he also happens to be a very well-connected guy. And so when this all happens, he just on Twitter openly starts, you know, reaching out to people like Minister of Western Economic Diversification, Michelle Rempel, Defense Minister Jason Kenney, for some reason. These people actually weighed in. And as soon as you've got these high-profile cabinet ministers weighing in, you know, first of all, their followers all see this, and then reporters start to take notice, and they start tweeting about it, and then reporters start writing about it, and then that catches on, and so suddenly
then Ezra Levant and the Rebel become a big force multiplier. This is the echo chamber in practice.
It becomes self-perpetuating, so then it starts trending on Twitter, but then reporters can write about how it's a top trending Twitter topic in Canada, and then more stories are written about it, and it was a brilliantly done campaign. But it all came from one guy. There was no actual backlash. Whose life is small enough that they would ever be that angry about the Tim Hortons choice in advertising partners for their Tim's TV screens while you're trying to get your double-double?
Well, to be fair, there were thousands of people who were angry that Tim's was in cahoots with Enbridge, that it was taking that money.
There was an environmental you know, move to, there was a petition for this, and certainly the anti-oil sands crowd, absolutely, they were offended by it. I can't quite get my head around this idea that everyone would be so angry on the other side. And as you can see, it didn't really come from anywhere. It didn't come from people being angry. It came from this one guy.
I think that the response would be like, so what? This is all legitimate. Yeah. It's legitimate for me to say to elected officials, hey, will you join me in this boycott? It's legitimate for Ezra Levant to say, this is, you know, we've got a petition. The part where I think what you did was a service to your readers was, you could read the headlines today and think that this nation, there was a popular, organic, grassroots uprising from people who are either employed by the oil industry or sympathetic to that, and who are appalled and disgusted at Tim Horton's behavior. And that just isn't true. There's no evidence of that.
Absolutely. And so what is a totally legitimate question? I mean, we're not trying to imply this as some sort of really unethical skullduggery or anything. We were just basically trying to dissect, here's how this happened. And it's not just this case. This happens a lot. I mean, we are living in a world now where you've got very highly trained people who are, you know, using social media to manufacture controversies, manufacture reactions, try to impact policy. And I don't always think that the media is good at pulling back the curtains and looking at how these things happen instead of just looking at what's the top trending Twitter topic.
And just to give a little bit of context on, you know, are we unfairly targeting one side of, you know, it's silly on either side. Boycott Tim's for one reason, boycott Tim's for another reason. The question is, which of these movements is fueled by actual people and which one is fueled by political operatives?
The initial draft of my story, the headline was actually Tim Horton's boycott controversy, incredibly lame even by Canadian standards. That got nixed.
The first one, as far as I can tell, the people who put it together are just, you know, environmentalists who are, I don't think, are paid to do this kind of work. Maybe more importantly, they had 30,000 signatures.
As opposed to a guy who's taking money from the energy industry and then is getting, you know, high profile people. There's a stark difference between those two. And absolutely, as you say, if you didn't know that, you would think more people are angry about Tim Hortons pulling the ads than were ever angry about them running them in the first place. And there's no evidence of that.
Right. The evidence of the people who are angry about the ads is the 30,000 100,000 person plus petition. The evidence of people angry that they pulled the ads
is the media coverage.
Well, and there is a petition that Ezra Levant has up at the Rebel, and if you go and sign up for that petition right now, it will not tell you how many people you're in. You're standing with the number of people who've signed the petition is a secret. Ezra Levant is keeping behind the Rebels on the back end of that server. So, you know, so for whatever reason, that is not.
Well, if it hits 31,000, I'm sure it'll.
If 31,000, we'll have a press release.
Yeah, I think this is sort of reflective of a wider thing in Canadian politics that is sometimes missed, is that it's really easy to look at the thing that's right in front of us, in this case, this social media backlash to Tim Hortons, when a lot of it is really not as it seems. And I don't think we're always very good at sort of pulling up the curtain a little bit and like looking at how these things come to be and who's really pushing the messages, because especially in Ottawa, there's usually someone pushing the message.
Let's talk about that in more detail, because you know, we're here at this journalism conference in Halifax, and yesterday you got into a bunch of examples of just how skilled people who are on the inside track of this are at manipulating the news and manipulating journalists specifically. And, you know, Justin Ling was you know, on a panel with you. Justin Ling of Vice covers Ottawa, as you do for BuzzFeed. Justin covers it for Vice. And he was saying, look, sometimes you got to do it. You got to go make friends with a conservative, have a beer, and do that old style thing of having sources who feel friendly towards you so that they can feed you some information and let yourself be fed that information. That's the way to get a scoop. And you said, uh-uh.
Okay, so my point is that it's not that that way of doing things is dead necessarily. It's that if that's all you can do, you're going to be a terrible reporter. That style of being a source reporter solely, that is dead. And if you are one of the people who practice in that and you know, you're a pitcher who only has a changeup at this point, because the game has changed. People have gotten, I mean, the PR culture in particular has infected government so much that leaks are now another tool that are used very, very frequently and very unethically. They will use reporters in ways that, I mean, they're just exposing lies and using reporters as vehicles for this.
I believe what you said is that if you rely on that too much, you're going to get fucked. And you gave a couple of examples of how reporters have been fucked before by conservatives who they were trying to get information from in that way, who were fed information. So let's look at those examples.
Sure. In 2012, there was a Vic Taves was a public safety minister, and he was pushing this piece of legislation, surveillance legislation, that was very over the top. And
this is lawful access. People might remember this.
Yeah, it's sort of the precursor to C-51, which is before us now. There was someone, we at the time did not know who, started a Twitter account called VickyLeaks, which was tweeting out really, really embarrassing details of Vic Taves' divorce files, which are publicly available back in Manitoba. And this created a huge uproar in the House that he was being, you know, intimidated and embarrassed and all that, and his rights as a member, an MP, were being violated.
Interesting case, just to look back on it now, of a guy who, you know, the idea of that was that here he was introducing legislation that, you know, every privacy advocate in the country and privacy commissioner in the country seemed to feel was going to be a gross violation of people's individual privacy. And so some sort of a retaliatory thing, well, here is, we're going to invade his privacy. But they invaded his privacy with public documents.
Oh, yeah.
It was tweeting. It was just taking stuff that otherwise would have been kind of hidden in plain sight. Public Manitoba court documents.
It was so absurd. It's too bad. The New York Times should have come in and wrote a story about this. It was so absurd that Anonymous got involved and like threatened to release more publicly available documents. And that was a comment. The Speaker of the House found this a violation of Vic Taves' privilege. This went to a parliamentary committee to study what they could do about Anonymous threatening an MP with publicly available information. I covered these hearings. It was completely absurd. You had these experts come in just being like, okay, how do we explain how the internet works to these old politicians?
And then this sort of, you know, in Parliament, this hunt for who is responsible.
Okay, so, yeah, who is responsible,
For taking public documents from one place to another public place?
So it's 2012. Trudeau's not on the scene yet. The NDP are very much second in the polls and seen as the primary contenders to the Conservatives. And so Craig Oliver of CTV, he's been around forever, you know, long distinguished career in journalism. He goes on the air and reports that it is an NDP staffer who is behind VickyLeaks. The next day and the day after that in the House of Commons, the Conservatives are getting up and they are just trashing the NDP with this as if it is fact. A few days after that, a report comes out because they investigated this, and it turned out the person who did it did it on a House of Commons computer, so they managed to figure out who was behind WikiLeaks. And it actually ended up being a guy who was a Liberal staffer, not an NDP staffer. The whole thing about it being an NDP staffer was clearly a leak from the Conservatives. And despite Craig Oliver's long and distinguished history, he got played. He got played. And he, from what I could tell, there was never any admission of it or any apology for it.
I mean, it's actually like a quite a skilled manipulation, isn't it? I mean...
Yeah, I mean...
To turn that to their advantage.
This is the thing. If you go into Ottawa with the opinion that high-ranking government people should be trusted or believed in any way, then this is what's going to happen right now, because they shouldn't be trusted or believed. And I shouldn't even just say government. I mean, everyone's got an agenda now. But yeah, I mean, people will lie to reporters.
How did that fall out for Craig Oliver?
No one noticed. No one called him out on it. He, to my knowledge, and I was looking, he never acknowledged it or apologized for it. He just pretended it was never said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the next time that something like this happened?
Right. So the other example I was bringing up yesterday was the following year, 2013. John Iveson, who is definitely a guy who lives by his sources, had a story about how tariffs were going to be cut in the next federal budget, the 2013 federal budget, on hockey gear. Got front page play. It was a big thing. It was a great story for the Conservatives. And then the budget comes out and they're actually raising tariffs on almost everything except hockey gear. They found, I mean, and again, it's very, very intelligent. They get this story about hockey gear that's going to resonate with everyone. That's going to stick in the public consciousness. The fact that they're actually essentially raising taxes is sort of the most clear way to put it. The fact that they're raising taxes gets completely ignored because of that. Iveson got absolutely played. And again, there's no admission of this. There's no acknowledgement that, geez, this is happening. Everyone is just, I don't know, too embarrassed. No one wants to call anyone else out. So we just kind of pretend it never happened.
And this is consistent with, I mean, Susan Delacourt wrote that book about how very exacting the Conservatives are about slicing and dicing special interests, giving special consideration. If you have a snowmobile, there might be something for you. You know, people vote based on their lives and what's going to impact them.
The Marketing for Votes book, absolutely. She really lays out how they have done. I mean, there's such sophisticated polling now into what people are interested in, what's going to get their attention, because most people aren't going to pay attention to politics on their own. So you need these hooks. And so absolutely, it's very, very calculated. And they have a lot of data and information at their disposal to know how to plan these leaks. And they're very good at it.
What chance do we have? I mean, what you're describing, it really feels like you've got like a tiger batting about a little mouse, you know? If we've got journalists who are just so hungry for a scoop that they will uncritically parrot something that a source tells them on the down low, why is the source telling them? It's not because the source had too many beers or feels friendly towards the reporter.
No, if you look at, I mean, it'd be an interesting, I mean, some journalism profs should be doing this and look at the sourced stories, the anonymous sourced stories that come in the media. I mean, the amount that actually just seems to come from someone getting a story over a few beers with a source are very much in the minority. The vast majority, you can see exactly who wants this out. Like, oh, geez, another finance scoop in the Globe and Mail. Wow, who saw that coming? I mean, like, it's very, very apparent, if you want to pay close attention, to where these are coming from and who wants to get these out.
The stories of how these stories get planted in the press are often more interesting than the planted story themselves. We did one this week on reporter Jordan Press, so the Canadian Press. Yeah. A couple of days before the RCMP released the full Zihav Pribo video, because they had been holding back 18 seconds, because sources tell the Canadian Press that the reason why the RCMP held back that stuff is because he's exhorting others to also make terrorist attacks in Canada. He lists off a bunch of names in Arabic that, you know, this might be some communication, all feeding into a narrative that he was not a lone wolf operator. And that was picked up. CBC picked it up. Globe and Mail picked it up. And then the video gets released, and it's just not in there. Somebody, whoever his sources were, misinformed him, and it wasn't until I kind of made a stink about it. You know, CP did retract the story, but that retraction didn't make it to the Globe and Mail until I was just sort of banging that drum on Twitter, and then they kind of, thank you very much for telling us, we've pulled the story. And that, you know, I said, well, that's great, everyone makes mistakes, but let's talk about how that mistake came to be, because that's interesting. Who wanted you to report that and why? And they told me, they sent me an email saying, well, we're not following up on that.
Yeah, and if you're Jordan, and I mean, I don't know exactly what happened. I thought that was such a weird thing that happened, because the video was imminently coming out anyway. So what was the point of leaking this false information?
To get a day or two jump on it?
To get a day or two
it?
That it's going to be disproved. I thought that was so weird. And I haven't actually talked to Jordan about this, who I quite respect. But if I'm Jordan in that situation, let's assume, and I do not know, let's assume this is coming from someone in the government or in the RCMP, because that seems to be the only natural way that this would have come out. Why are you not then coming out and writing a story about how the RCMP was leaking false information to the press and outing them? I mean, if someone is going to lie to you, if someone is going to manipulate you, why would you take it? Why would you not then? I mean, this applies also to Iveson. This applies also to Oliver. Go out and say, here's where the information came from. Here are the people who are doing this, and here's what they did. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't think that the reporter-source relationship of confidentiality really stands when it becomes apparent that the source is openly manipulating the reporter. What burden of protection do we now owe that person if they are lying to us?
Yeah, I wondered that too. You know, this anonymous source, okay, you know, you protect your sources, but you find out afterwards that your source completely played you and shielded themselves.
It's even personal pride. I mean, how would you, I would be furious if I were on the other end of that. And here's the thing, is you play the source game, and I don't want to pretend that I haven't done this. Of course, we all use anonymous sources. I've used anonymous sources. It's going to inevitably happen where you get something and no one's going to talk on the record about it. And so we all do it. But if I were on that side of it, I would be outraged. I wouldn't just take it. I mean, I think...
Well, it's embarrassing, right?
It's hugely humiliating.
You can see why he just wants it to go away want it to go away. Yeah. And yet... You know, what is owed to the readers there? Like, so tell us exactly what happened. And, you know, arguably that is a better story.
Yeah, I don't think media is very good at self-reflection. I mean, you know, Jordan was a leader on the Senate file for the last 2 years. He should be able to being like, look, I will stand by my work, look at everything I've done. But yeah, in this case, we got it wrong. And here's what happened. I mean, I think people, that, I agree with you. That's a much more interesting story than what he was
getting. People are actually very accepting of human error if you're just humble about it and, you know, own up to it, especially when you're like hey, and here's something more that you didn't know before I told it.
Yeah, it could happen. It really could happen.
Like, you can get to the truth by making a mistake. You could kind of make a mistake, get played by a source, you know, misreport something. Yeah. Say, you know what? I got that wrong, but here's how that happened. And, you know, the reader ultimately is better served by the whole process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, so clearly this is not, I mean, you know, Jordan Press is at CP. I mean, some of these guys, these are really long-time, high-profile reporters. I mean, there are no rules right now. They're not just manipulating young 24-year-olds who just came to the Hill. I mean, this is happening to everyone. And I just, people talk about the media all being in collusion, and you know, we always roll our eyes because we know it's not true. I wish it was true. I will say that on the record. I wish the media all worked together. If we if we tried to actually flex our collective might, we could stamp out a bunch of the horrible PR rot that has ruined Ottawa. I mean, right now, and you talk about this, and people, you know, it's easy to sound hyperbolic, but right now in Ottawa, I mean, they've blocked access to cabinet ministers unless they want to talk. They've blocked access to basic information. They've gutted the access to information system. We've just stood by and allowed this to happen because the media is so fractured that anytime there's any talk of getting our backup, well, okay, so Sun News isn't gonna go along with this, so CTV doesn't want to get scooped by Sun, so they're going to do it, and now CBC's going to... And it's just a house of cards, and it all collapses.
What if we marched in solidarity and we didn't allow ourselves to get played? What could we do to give some resistance to this lack of access? Well,
so everyone in Ottawa complains about this. It used to be, even as recent as the Paul Martin government, that if you asked a question to a department, they would file it into one of three categories. One was essentially purely a factual one. How many Canadian Armed Forces bases are there in Canada? And then there was sort of a middle ground, a factual question that was a bit loaded, and then finally purely a political one of, is the government going to close Canadian Armed Forces? So for the political ones, absolutely, all the political people wouldn't get involved. It would go up the chain. Right now, everything, even the most basic pieces of information that you're trying to ask for, you're usually not going to get. Departments have been told, this is insane but true, departments have been told not even to answer their phones, so that you have to send in an email or leave a voice message, because for them it's all about getting something written down that they can pass up the line through the Privy Council office and back. And usually what you get several hours later is a response that... Let's say you're asking about cuts to veterans affairs. You're going to get a response that's about how much the minister loves veterans. And it's not going to actually answer your question about, well, when is this office going to shut down or whatever.
Right. So it's boilerplate, pro-government policy response about the issue, mm-hmm. not in direct...
Yeah, it's talking points.
It's talking points, and it doesn't address the actual inquiry at all.
Exactly. So they do this, and everyone complains about it, but I think what reporters often don't sort of sit back and think... is they're not doing this because they have some sort of huge grudge against the media. They're not doing this because they hate us. They do it because it works. They do it because if you look at most stories that are written, they run those talking points. They say, well, the minister's office would only say this. But that's what they want. They just – it's because – again, Delacroix's book is good at this. It's all about messaging. It's all about getting – they've crafted these messages that they think are going to resonate in people's minds, and that's what they want to get out there. If the media as a whole started saying, you know what? Fuck you. You're not going to answer a question. You get did not answer a question, or you got no comment. You got refused an interview. We're not running your talking points. It would actually end. I mean, for whatever reason, and this part I don't actually get, it really bothers them when you do that. You would think that they'd be totally, you know, checked out. But no, if you ask a question, they don't – actually answer it, and you wrote refuse to answer question, they get very, very irritated right. to follow up with you. I mean, it's actually effective.
Which is accurate. I mean, if I ask, you know, how come you're wearing no shoes, and they say, well, I have a wonderful hat, right? Yeah. I'm under no obligation to say, when asked why he has no shoes, he said, I have a wonderful hat.
Yeah, exactly.
You can just answer when asked why he has no shoes, he refused to answer the question.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you're in, and then they see themselves in press refusing to answer the question. And you're right. We get the idea that they don't care. Mm-hmm. They care.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm totally with you. There's no ethical issue with this. If they're not answering your question, they're not answering your question. But the convention has always been you get both sides of stories. The convention has always been, well, you got to reach out for comment. And the convention is there for a reason. But if we have a government, as we do right now, who has just actively gamed the system to not work, we have to adapt. And I think we're just 10
Well, yeah, they've gamed the system in such a way that them getting caught without shoes is an occasion to boast about their hat.
Exactly.
Like a bad press day, a journalist actually finding out something becomes an occasion for them to once again get their talking points out.
Yeah.
Unless we just say no.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for example, Stephen Harper hasn't done a press conference in Ottawa since 2012. But you know what he does do all the time? Photo ops. He does all the time these photo ops of anytime there's a visiting dignitary or he's signing some sort of memorandum of understanding or whatever. He will invite photographers and video people up to his office, but no questions, no reporters allowed. Every single time the photographers and video people line up and they go and they take their photos and they take their video and they don't get a question. If we collectively said, we're not going to do that unless a reporter's allowed up and we're going to ask you some questions about this,
yeah.
Then they would have to do it. I mean, they want those images. It's very important to them. But we don't. And we don't because, and it is understandable, and those sort of the realities, is that all you need to do is convince one TV station or one outlet to sort of break it, and then the...
And then they got an exclusive.
The editors in Toronto. Yeah, they've got the lamest exclusive ever, but they got an exclusive. So then all the editors in Toronto for the opposing networks are like, why don't we have this? Why don't we have this? And they're not on the trenches, so they don't really see the long game. So they say, we want this, and then it just falls apart.
Yeah, but there's no accident that the press had a bit more collective might when there was a consortium of just a few press voices.
Oh, yeah.
Now that it's fragmented into a lot of different pieces, it's very hard, you know, just to stop one small outfit. And here you are. You're the BuzzFeed politics guy. You're part of the problem, right? You're part of the fragmentation, and you're lecturing, you know, the journalistic establishment of how they need to kind of like march in lockstep.
Let me clarify. I don't think fragmentation is a problem. I think diversity of media is a great thing, but you're absolutely right. I mean, the places where the press is winning these battles and it is happening is provincially. The politicians always need reporters more than reporters need politicians. And in Ottawa, there's no way to act on that. People forget. Politicians need us more than we need them. And it's not even close. It's a lot, a lot. And in provincially, where there's smaller press galleries where they have been able to sort of get their backs up. I was part of one in Nova Scotia. In Nova Scotia, we used to, and still do, every Thursday it's a cabinet meeting. The premier and all the cabinet ministers come out and we get to scrum them. The Roddy McDonald, the former premier of Nova Scotia, wanted to change that where he was going to go stand at his podium and we would sit down and throw questions at him and he would look more official and he'd get the nice lighting and he could choose who was asking questions and who wasn't.
Usually it's a scrum and a scrum looks like you're cornering some criminal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you got mics in your face and people are, can get...
And he wanted to look like Jed Bartlett from something. The West Wing where he's standing there.
Very presidential.
He's going to stand there as a statesman by the podium and say, yes,
yeah.
Jimmy from the Daily Planet.
And we just said no. And it was the weirdest scene. He comes out, he's standing at a podium. We're all on the other end of the room. And he's like, I'm ready to take your questions. And we're like, well, Mr. Premier, we'd like you to come where we always do this. I'm ready to take your questions. And it just was this weird standoff, which CTV actually got on video. And so eventually we say, all right, we'll do it your way. So we all took all of our cameras and everything. We went up to the podium, scrummed him at the podium. But because it was elevated, now the angle for the TV cameras was that low chin angle.
It's that Citizen Kane angle.
Oh, yeah. It just looks terrible. So on the nightly news, he just looked awful. So the quote-unquote compromise was he was going to keep the podium, but we could still scrum him around it on the ground. So we got exactly what we were doing before, but he had a piece of wood in front of him. And I mean, it was just a complete walk down. But that's what happened, because the press gallery just stood up and said no.
That is the silliest thing I ever heard.
It's very Nova Scotian.
So BuzzFeed was a punchline at a recent award show. Mansbridge made some playful dig at you guys. And what is the line? You guys are just doing cat lists. You're doing lists about kittens on the internet.
Let me tell you, I love when people say that shit. It is great. It is nothing that is more invigorating as a reporter than being the underdog. That is exactly the approach I want people to have, because we're going to eat their lunch if they think like that. I mean, we are going to be doing a mix of hard investigative news and news that other people are doing, but we're going to do it in a more blunt way, a more entertaining way, and just in a different way. So there's so much straight-laced Canadian media and no one trying to have some fun with it, which is what we're going to do. But like I say, I love when people come with that approach, because I think we're going to be breaking a lot of stories.
I kind of rather be covering Ottawa from your position than be burdened with the dignity and respectability of the Globe and Mail or the CBC to be considered just silly when you actually are the one to, you know, do it like what you just did.
Yep.
And explain to people in kind of an evocative web journalism sense of just, you know, it's almost like a Storify where you had the tweets and then here's this led to this and this led to this, and it wasn't written in CP style.
And more people should be doing it. I mean, if you're CBC or if you're the Canadian press, you just can't. That's not your job. You got to be covering the main stuff. But because they're there, especially the Canadian press is a fantastic breaking news bureau in Ottawa, more places, I think, should be relying on that. Everyone subscribes to CP. Use that for your day-to-day copy, because it's going to be very, very good. And then use your resources to do other stuff or do things in a different way on the side. Everyone's been talking about that for years, and it just keeps not happening, and I don't understand it.
So what are you going to do if you're not having the beer with the conservative and getting fed some false information? How are you going to get a scoop?
There needs to be a shift more towards looking at the things that the government still legally has to disclose, because there's a lot. I mean, anytime they pay for a poll, government studies, every time they buy everything, any contract they do, I mean, everything has to be written down somewhere. But there's never going to be a press release put out about it. We need more people to actually be going through these departmental performance reports, going through, you know, the end of year summary of what was spent, going through tenders, all of this stuff, access to information requests. I mean, there has to be more of a move towards data journalism. Mm-hmm. And we're never going to wholly move away from source journalism. It's just not going to happen, and it shouldn't happen. But the thing is that what I have found is if you have a broad base of being able to find stories, and the reporters who do have that, you're still going to be able to get sources to talk to you. I mean, you look at someone like Glenn McGregor. Glenn McGregor's maybe the ultimate data journalist. He still gets sources to talk to him. People, they have short memories in Ottawa. Even if you fuck them one day on a story, if the next day they find out something that's going to screw over someone they don't like, they're still going to come to you.
Yeah.
Because they respect you as a reporter. I mean, you don't need to just rely on sources to get by in Ottawa.
Being an adversarial journalist doesn't mean that you're not going to get information from sources.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing. Absolutely. Yeah.
We've done a lot of talk here that I think conservatives will find, you know, bashing of their elected officials and their operatives and their popular movements. If Liberals or NDP are in power, you think it's going to be any different for journalists?
No, I mean, I don't expect so. And it's not going to change with governments. I think it's going to change when we force it to change. Like I said earlier, they do it because it works. They do it because it's an effective way of getting their message out, and they do it because it avoids off-the-cuff gaffes. I mean, people talk about Stephen Harper with a certain tactical reverence, but I mean, if you look at his past interviews, he was kind of a Trudeau. He would often flub his lines. He would often say things that were they're taken the wrong way. They were very embarrassing. So he just decided, okay, I'm going to keep the mic out of my face. And it has worked very, very well for him. I completely understand why they did it. And I completely understand why the NDP or the Liberals would do it to a varying degrees. I mean, this is the way it's done right now is a sort of a level of neurosis that might not be quite the same, but overarching media control, absolutely. When the NDP came in Nova Scotia when I was covering them, they did the exact same thing. They aped the Conservatives' tactics. The one thing I will say is that there are opportunities to move the line, and when Harper was elected, he brought in a new act was supposed to beef up access to information and transparency, and ended up doing a fraction of what was actually supposed to happen. But during elections in particular, and during changeovers of government, when someone's in opposition, they have to say, of course, we're going to do this and this and this and this and this, and you got to hold them to it. They're only going to do a fraction of it, but it's the only way, if they get into power, but it's the only chance we have to sort of move the goalposts a little bit.
no government wants to be more accountable.
No, of course not. Why would they? It's insane. I mean, we should look at it from their side. We'd probably be doing the exact same thing. As soon as you remove any conception of ethics or being a good person or like the public's right to know, as soon as that goes out the window, it makes total sense to completely funnel information, like to funnel information through yourself, and you decide exactly what gets out, and anything that doesn't, anything that is at all negative towards you, you just cut that off. I mean, it's completely logical what is happening right now.
Yeah,
we just need to adapt to it.
They're doing their jobs. So we need to do ours.
That's your Canada Land Show. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read them all. I respond when I can. I'm on Twitter at Jesse Brown, and the show's website is canadalandshow.com. I make this show with Katie Jensen. The next episode of Canada Land Commons will be up tomorrow on Tuesday, and the next episode of Shortcuts will be online Thursday. If you like this show, support it.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A couple of years ago, a cop was shot dead on a deserted pier in the tiny nation of Belize. The only other person there that night was a frightened young woman found covered in blood. By all appearances, it was an open and shut case. But not in Belize, where this woman was connected to a mysterious billionaire who basically runs the place.
Justice will not be served in this case. She's gonna get away with it.
Or will she? White Devil, a Campside Media original. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.